So you've got a business, but what about a brand? The difference? More of you. Wix gives you the freedom to create your website, own your brand, and do it on your own, exactly how you envisioned it. Experience limitless customization. Boost your creativity and efficiency with AI tools for every part of your business journey. Scale up with built-in SEO, e-com, and scheduling features. Put more of you in your business. Go to Wix.com and do it all yourself.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit HighFiveCasino.com. That's high, the number five, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Today, the Cabinet is to approve a so-called windfall tax on energy companies who've been reporting record profits over the past year. Various groups and political parties have been calling for a windfall tax on energy companies, but how will it work and does it go far enough? Well, further details on the measure are to be announced at a press conference later today. We're joined now by Pat Leahy, political editor with the Irish Times. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, Pat.
This has been a while coming. It's quite obvious that if you're generating by wind, which is costing you exactly the same as it costs when the wind was blowing before the war in Ukraine, that you're making much more money than you did before.
Yeah, that's right. Because, of course, the cost of wind being zero hasn't moved. But the cost to consumers of energy produced by wind has, as everybody will know, rocketed. What is actually to be approved by the Cabinet today, as I understand it, is two separate measures, obviously linked, but they will apply in different ways. For energy companies that are such as wind energy companies that don't generate their energy from fossil fuels, what is to be approved is that their revenues above a certain level in their entirety will be directed. So it's like 100% tax on their revenues above a certain level. Now, we'll wait to see if that level is going to be set in the legislation. More likely, I would have thought that the legislation would empower the government to set by order a level. But what they're talking about is a price higher than somewhere between 120, 180 euros per megawatt hour. And of course, some prices have risen as high as 300 megawatts per 300 euros per megawatt hour at times of great energy shortages. So that's one measure.
I suppose, Pat, before you carry on, we should explain that what happens is they all get the same price, whether it's coal or gas or wind or solar or water, hydro, they all get the same price because it is the price of generation by really the most expensive kind of fossil fuel that determines the price that everybody gets. So if gas is the most expensive and it's costing a fortune, the wind energy generators get exactly the same price. That's the way this crazy market works. So you would have thought with loads of wind in the Irish grid system and wind costing the same all the time, that balance would have brought our overall prices down. That's not the way this market works. So that's why we need this tax.
Because it is a managed and contrived market rather than a freestanding market, as it were. And of course, there's reasons for that. But you're absolutely right in the way that it works has led to these super inflated profits for wind energy companies. And as I say, it's revenue. It's not exactly, you know, a normal tax as we would understand. It's that the entirety of the revenues above a certain level are to be diverted to the government. The second part of what is on the Cabinet agenda today, as I understand it, is a solidarity tax on fossil fuel companies, which includes, but is not limited to, gas companies, who, because of higher prices, have been making much higher profits, and there will be a tax on those profits rather than diverting the revenues as in the case that we've just outlined. So we'll get more detail. There's a press conference likely to take place after cabinet, probably around noon or so today, maybe a little bit later. Cabinet is quite a long agenda today and will run on, but certainly by lunchtime we should have further details as to how this would work and what ministers hope that it will raise, because the estimates of how much might be raised for government by this measure, and of course, it'll be next year before any revenue becomes available to government from this. I've seen estimates ranging from, you know, 400 or 500 million up to 2 to 3 billion. So we might have firmer information on that later.
One would expect all of that to be ploughed back into some sort of subsidies for consumers.
The general hope within government is that it will give them a pot of money to do precisely that, to help consumers with energy bills into next winter. Because while I suppose to an extent this winter has been taken care of by the subsidies that have been announced earlier this year and also were ramped up in the budget, if you go into next year and looking at perhaps next winter, assuming that the conflict in Ukraine continues, you're going to have sky high energy prices, perhaps even higher than we see at the moment into next winter. And what's hoped in government is that revenues from these taxes will give them a sort of a war chest to deal with that.
They've decided not to hang around and waiting for an EU overall plan. They're going to go it alone.
Well, these measures were agreed at EU level, but because
we seem to have lost Pat. We'll come back to Pat in a moment, because I want to talk to him about other matters in cabinet. But Jennifer Whitmore, Social Democrats TD for Wicklow and their spokesperson on climate, has been listening to our conversation. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
What is your reaction to the proposals, in so much as we know of them at the moment?
Yes, I suppose we are waiting to hear the detail, but in principle, I would welcome it. The Social Democrats have been calling for a windfall tax on energy companies now for quite some time, and I think it's positive that we will be seeing some sort of tax on both the wind and solar generators, but also the profits of, say, gas companies, and you know, so that it does seem to address all aspects of the market. So that is welcome. But as you say, we do need to see the detail, and really the devil is always in the detail. So the question for us in the Social Democrats will be, will the measure go far enough? And, you know, our policy and our principle is that there should be no company making obscene profits on the back of this energy crisis. And that's exactly what we've seen over the last year or so. And it's important that any profits are really ring-fenced and are used in a targeted fashion to assist people who are actually struggling at the moment and making decisions about whether they can eat or heat their home. So I think really that's going to be the important details that we need to be seeing from this decision today.
Are you happy that the transparency of companies' profits is such that the tax can be fairly applied?
No, and I suppose that would be a concern is whether or not, I mean, companies are usually very good. They have an awful lot of expertise at you know, finding ways that they can maximise the profits. And, you know, I think we need to make sure that whatever system's put in place will really meet our needs as a state, and that there isn't opportunities to downplay the level of profits that they have. So again, we will need to see not only what the plans are of government, but how they plan to actually implement them. And what we've seen from government in relation to the energy crisis so far is that they've operated in a very reactive manner. And in a very non-targeted manner. And that is a big concern for us in the Social Democrats because, you know, as a state, we don't have unlimited resources, and we need to make sure that if there is any assistance and subsidies being given in relation to this energy crisis, that it's going to the wrong people.
So who should be helped?
So, look, I mean, it is really those who are at risk of energy poverty needs to be the number one priority. Now, we are in such a state at the moment that, you know, approximately 50% of people are could be categorised as such, and that may increase over the coming year, you know, in this winter and next winter as well. So it is people who are on low and middle incomes, because I think those people are absolutely struggling at the moment with the high costs, not just of fuel and energy, but also of things like rent and food. But what we've seen so far is that when the government have brought out extensive measures, such as the energy credit scheme, the electricity credit scheme, that actually, because it wasn't targeted, we saw quite a large amount of money that was actually being handed to people who really didn't need it. So people, you know, I was very vocal at the time because the government was essentially handing 50 million of taxpayers' money to people who had holiday homes to enable them to cover the
but
cost.
But there's a very easy way, Jen, we pointed out in this programme, but they didn't seem to be listening or embrace it, very easy way with holiday homes that the credit dies. If it's not used, it dies. That would you know, if you put a time limit on it, and if they're not in their holiday home over the winter, they don't get a break. So
That's a very good suggestion. Yeah, that's a very good suggestion, Pat. And I think what we've seen is that when the government first came out with this November last year, it was very much an emergency. No one was expecting what was going to happen in Ukraine and with the energy prices. And they said, we don't have time to devise a more targeted measure. But they've since had a year and they still came out with a non-targeted measure. So what we need is for the government to be proactive and to actually examine all the schemes and mechanisms that they have so that the money is going to the right person. We don't know how long this energy crisis is going to go on for. It certainly will be with us next year. Some analysts believe that it could go on for a number of years. So government has to be very careful with how it spends its money. And the Social Democrats, what we want to see the government be more proactive. And what we want actually is that governments not only just have, you know, these emergency cash handouts for people, but actually that they make people's homes more resilient to these energy shocks. And one way that is, and I can't for the life of me understand why the government hasn't assisted more in this, but it's actually to put solar panels on people's homes. So 1 million homes in Ireland are suitable for solar panels. It would reduce people's energy by 40%, which is an incredible amount over the course of a year. Solar panels are they're much cheaper than retrofitting. They're also less, you know, they take a lot less time. You don't have to completely redo your house to do it. Yeah. And solar panels can be put up on people's roofs in, you know, in a day. And actually you don't need from a contractor perspective, it's a 2-week training program to get this done. So we believe that there should be much greater intervention, state intervention in this. We think the state should be actually going to Europe and purchasing in bulk these panels, and that would greatly reduce the price by over 50% is what I've been told by some experts in the field. And then actually just really ramp up the installation of these and go around and do estate by estate. And that would be a really quick way to do it. It would make sure that people are cutting their energy costs over the summer, over the next year.
It's a very sound idea. Whether or not it could be implemented as rapidly as you suggest, it might be a cowboy's charter, who knows. But obviously the grants are there. You can apply for them if you're at a particular income level. You get 100% grant for these kind of things. If you have a higher income, you don't get 100%. But there's money for everybody. But you go through a contractor. That's the way it works. You're saying accelerate that whole process.
Accelerate it. But as well as that, in relation to solar, funnily enough, Pat, there is no solar grant. So if it's £2,500 for your solar installation. That's the grant that you get. And that's not reduced. So for those people who are on the warmer home scheme that are getting state supports, they get free insulation. They don't get free solar.
Okay.
The government themselves only put 14 million in the budget last year for solar grants. And when you compare that with the, I suppose, 50 million they've given to homes in the last year, you know, holiday homes, you can see there's a great disparity there.
Yeah, but you can see why, if you've got a badly insulated home and you stick solar on the roof, you're not really helping yourself. You're getting some free energy from the sun, but you're still wasting a lot of it going out through the walls. So you can see why they would like to focus the 100% grant on making the houses cosy and warm and reducing the overall energy consumption, which is...
Yeah, look, we do need retrofitting and we do need that, but actually the majority or a considerable amount of the money that's spent in Irish homes is actually heating water.
Yeah.
And the solar panels would actually help with that. So that's where I think the greatest reduction would be, that actually household water would be reduced. But look, I think this is fundamentally what we want to see is the government being proactive and not being caught on the back foot constantly when it comes to this, because, you know, doing it that way is very expensive. It's not targeted, and it's not an approach that government should be taking.
All right, Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us. Jennifer Whitmore, Social Democrats TD for Wicklow, their spokesperson on climate. Pat Leahy is back. Thankfully, Pat, what else is on the cabinet agenda today?
Quite a busy agenda, I'm told, Pat. There's policing reforms on it, new policing and community safety authority legislation to set that up. There's a proposal to ban vaping for under 18s and also to introduce restrictions on ads for vaping products. There's proposals for changes to the wards of court system, amendments to the assisted decision-making legislation. There'll be a counter motion against the Sinn Féin private members motion, which will be debated in the Dáil tonight. And I expect you'll hear quite a lot of later in the day, because it's in advance of what campaigners hope will be a big demonstration on Saturday in Dublin about the shortage of housing. There may be discussions. It's not a formal cabinet agenda item, I'm given to understand, but there may be a discussion on the possibility of an inquiry into abuse at certain schools. Difficulty here, I suppose, that people within government are wrestling with, there's a general acceptance that some sort of inquiry or some sort of process, and I've heard people talk about some sort of a scoping mechanism in advance of a formal inquiry into abuse in schools. The difficulty is how that is prevented from spiraling into a sort of a wide-ranging rolling inquiry that could cover any number of schools in the country and go on for 10 or 15 years, which
isn't, you know, forgive me, but what happened in these schools seems to me to be a crime. Surely it's a Garda matter. Instead of getting some high paid barrister in to do an inquiry or a judge, that goes on and on and on and on and on and on, and eventually you're looking for redress for people who went to fee paying schools, etc., etc. You know where it goes. Let the Garda at it. If there are people, you know, still living who can be charged, let them be charged. If there are people dead, well, there's precious little justice that those victims are going to get, except perhaps to embarrass the orders fairly fundamentally.
You know, I think there's, I don't think anybody disputes the suggestion that if people who may have committed abuse or are accused of abuse are still living, that they should be investigated by the guards. And no one is suggesting that that shouldn't happen. But what a lot of the survivors have talked about is some sort of a process that enables them to, you know, to come face to face with the order, if that is, or the representatives of the order, are to have their stories told. And that's a different sort of a process to one that is governed by the rules of the criminal justice system. And I think there is an expectation in government that some sort of process that takes account of what survivors want in that regard will have to be instituted. The difficulty, of course, is that as soon as anybody, and we reported in our paper this morning, my colleague Jack Powers, a piece that the Dominicans who ran Newbridge College have acknowledged that they received many complaints and made a number of settlements for alleged abuse at Newbridge College. And so the difficulty, as some people in government would see it, is that, you know, as soon as there's an allegation of abuse in any given school, that school is then added to the list of schools being investigated by the inquiry. And that, as I say, this thing could go on and on, and perhaps, you know, that is not quite what survivors want either, an endless.
I'm just wondering in what way, process. You know, it's a criminal process. Obviously, if someone has been abused, it is a crime and it should be investigated as such. But when you have orders running schools, what is the underlying business of the state getting involved here in their inquiries? Do you know what I mean? Because although the Department of Education obviously had overall supervision of inspection and so on, quality of teaching, exams and all the rest of it, just wondering, does the state really have to have its put its hands up about what might have gone on in a private school?
I think there, I mean, there's two views on that, Pat. I mean, Louise O'Keefe, who won her case in the European Court of Human Rights after a lengthy legal battle against the state and secured compensation for abuse that she suffered at the hands of a headmaster in a primary school. She and her lawyers have made the case that the state does have a liability for this because, you say, it was responsible for oversight and inspection, it paid the teachers and so forth. And very many of the people who are accused of abuse, the clerics who were accused of abuse, would have been on the state's payroll as teachers or administrators in these schools. So to that extent, that there is an argument there that the state has some that has some liability. On the other hand, you know, I suppose one could also make the argument that, you know, payment and oversight of these schools and of all schools certainly didn't amount to a license, you know, a license to mistreat children. The difficulty that some people within government who are trying to wrestle with this dilemma at the moment have pointed out to me is that, you know, there's 4,000 schools in the country. Up to the early 1980s, corporal punishment was permitted by law in these in all schools, and in many cases was quite viciously applied. Are we now to go back and you know, to essentially litigate all the ills that are all the misfortunes and, you know, the terrible treatment that many people endured at the hand of the education system in an Ireland that was in many ways a more brutal place? So I'm not sure that there is any straightforward or simple answer to this, Pat, that will keep everybody happy, but it's certainly something that's going to be on the government's agenda for the foreseeable future, I think.
Pat Leahy, political editor with the Irish Times, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
It's time to turn your daydream into your dream job. Wix gives you the power to turn your passion into a moneymaker with a website that fits your unique vision and drives you towards your goals. Let your ideas flow with AI tools that guide you, but give you full control and flexibility. Manage your business from one dashboard and keep it growing with built-in marketing features. Get everything you need to turn your part-time passion into a full-time business. Go to Wix.com.